Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk. We do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, Teekay, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's seven-time radio station of the year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, as is highspeedweb.net. The streams are signal 24/7, 365. Well, the mountaintop has come across Cherry Road and is now sitting in our presence. The man who makes Winthrop University operate day in and day out. Is that an overstatement?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Well, it was good PR anyway. Dr. Dan Mahoney, and we thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Manny.
How many years are you into this now? Four years?
This is my fourth year, yeah.
Fourth year? And you don't seem to have any scars or arrows through you?
No.
Everybody's happy.
And I lost most of my hair before I got here, so I haven't lost hair either.
You know, it's interesting. We're just talking about the memorial service for Haney Howe this past Sunday over at Carroll Hall. And one of the things that I took away from this was how Haney was able to see things in students as far as their potential that they had no idea. And he could point them in the right direction, and boom, things just seemed to blossom. And your comment back to me was, you know, that's something that seems to be unique about Winthrop as far as what the professors are doing day in and day out besides just teaching.
Yeah, and I've heard that from alumni so many times. I hear it from current students all the time. As I was talking with a student at lunch yesterday, and that's what she said, is she was in our ACAD class, which is our freshman orientation class, and one of the professors just a few weeks in said, you know, you need to be doing research, and took her over to work with another faculty member almost immediately. So that looking for talent, what people's skills are, what their interests are, seems to be kind of part of the culture here at Winthrop, and much more so than any place else I've ever been.
Well, that's good, because I know that everybody in the world of education is more focused now than they've ever been about getting students into employment,
yeah,
meaningful employment, because when you look at the investment when you make in higher ed, you expect the son or daughter to walk out and get into that. So how do you do that with the students? Is it just like you talked about, professors seeing potential?
Yeah, sometimes it is, and sometimes, again, I've talked with several who will tell you that major career moves were based on advice from a professor, so I hear that a lot. Our students are much more likely than students at other places to do some type of internship experience, field experience, where they get out and do things while they're still in college. A lot of those turn into jobs, or at least lead them to a job someplace else, so that's another big thing that we focus on. And we have offers for career and civic engagement, which brings employers to campus as well. So there's a lot of different things that we do. Always looking at our programs and seeing if there's some change we can make that, again, can get them better prepared for the workforce.
Because the liberal arts education that I got 100 years ago versus what you're offering over at Winthrop now, I would imagine very, very different as far as being focused, as we're talking about, with employment.
Yeah, but it's still a combination of the two, I think. It's, you know, having the solid liberal arts background, which then leads to preparation in a profession. I think that's what makes Winthrop special, is we do both those things really well. And as I always talk about, I teach class. I will tell you the writing skills, the critical thinking skills of the Winthrop students are better than any place else I've ever been. And I think a lot of it has to do with what we do in that general education program relative to liberal arts education. So that part's important, but then it prepares them to do well in my class, which is not necessarily the liberal arts class.
So you and your compatriot, the athletic director, mm-hmm, Dr. Ken Halpin, are doing the class again this year?
Yes, we are. It's our third year doing it.
So so the reviews have been good enough to continue?
Good enough, yeah. They haven't fired us from it yet. So, yeah, allowed to keep teaching.
Do you find the students challenging?
Yeah. And this group's been, this year has been particularly good. They've been very talkative in class, asking lots of questions. So it's, we always start, there's this thing called the D1 ticker, which tells all the big stories in college athletics for the day. And we ask them, you know, kind of, what have you seen that's been interesting? Sometimes that can eat up 25, 30 minutes of class because they are engaged and they're reading that and thinking critically about what does this mean actually for college athletics.
All right. Well, let's get into some of the nuts and bolts. I know one of the things that everybody in higher education, in South Carolina at least, is being looked to do is to improve this whole thing called the escalating tuition year after year after year. And the legislature's got some kind of bill that's being bandied about right now that would, if you accept the additional money, would kind of cap the tuition for that particular year. Is that
yeah, that's pretty much what it says, yeah.
So in the case of Winthrop, if it bill passed the way you're reading it now, you would be receiving what?
The House bill has us, I think it's about $1.9 to $2 million that we would be receiving in recurring funds, as well as I think it's $7.5 million in non-recurring, so things we could use on buildings, on one-time costs. With the idea, again, we would not increase tuition. And, yeah, that would be an acceptable deal. That would be about the equivalent of about a 2.4% tuition increase. So that would allow us to have the additional resources we need to cover the rising costs. But, again, having the state cover that rather than our students would be a big help.
Is this something that you negotiate with the state and saying, you know, you're offering us $2 million, but, you know, we really need 2.4? I mean, how does that work?
I don't know if I'd call it a negotiation. Obviously, when we talk with our legislators, if we think it's going in a direction that would be detrimental or negative for us, then we would certainly share that with people and say, you know, if you could do this, this would actually make it more manageable for us. So I often share with them things, you know, keep in mind if you do X, this will be the impact on us. And if you did it a slight different way, we would be able to manage it better.
So each school would be different because of the size and the issues that each one has.
Yeah.
And Winthrop continues to have one of the oldest campuses in the state. So you constantly have maintenance issues, do you not?
Oh, yeah. We're about 30% of our square footage was built before 1930 and like 70-some percent before 1970. And as I always like to joke, I can guarantee you in 1925 no one was thinking Wi-Fi. So just upgrading the facilities for the technology of today has some additional challenges because they weren't built with that in mind. And so, and that before you get into roof issues and piping and all those things, you know, everything has a useful life. And once you get beyond that, you got to do repairs.
All right. So one of the things that you set out to do from day one was to try to deal with the issue of how can we grow the size of the campus body. And I can't remember what it was when you got here, and I'm not sure what the numbers are right now, but you've had some success with this.
We've had some success in areas, and I think this is going to be one of our better years. So last year what we had success with in particular was the online graduate programs. So we started four fully online master's programs that already have close to 140 students enrolled in them. And each semester we enroll another cohort. So they're not more of an annual group. It's a semester by semester, including the summer. So within a couple years, that could be 400 or 500 students that we have in those programs combined.
Wow.
We also are this fall starting a Bachelor's of Professional Studies, which is geared for students who've completed some college but never finished a bachelor's degree, and is set up to be more something that they can complete whilst they're still working. So it's more user-friendly for those people who are in that situation. What we are seeing even before that program still has to go through final accreditation approval before we can go out and actively recruit for it. But we've already seen a huge increase in applications overall, which we're real excited about. And so we could be up, compared to last year, up by about 1,000 applications by the end of the recruitment period.
Wow. And the quality of those applications versus...
Right, about the same as we've normally been. So when we look at our acceptance rates, usually around the 70% range, this group has been right about the 70% range. So the quality is about where we normally are. So we're getting more, but they're also just as qualified as the students we've had in the past.
All right. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. If you get 1,000 additional applications...
Yes.
...and you accept 70% of them...
Yes.
...roughly what portion of those 70% would come? Half?
Usually it's closer to about 30% nowadays.
Okay.
What we call is the yield rate. The yield is the percentage of students of those accepted who actually come. I will tell you 10, 20 years ago, it used to be 40 to 50%. Now for most universities, it's closer to 30, and that's because students are applying for more colleges than they ever have before. So even using my family as an example, I applied for 4. I think my wife applied to 2. My son applied to 7. And so the yield rates for all of us have gone down. So closer to 30% is more normal.
So you might pick up a couple hundred additional students.
We could possibly, yeah.
This fall.
Yeah.
Do you have space to put them?
Oh, yeah, we do. So, yeah, we'd be fine. We have enough capacity in our residence halls to do that. enough classroom space. So, yeah, it would not be – and it wouldn't be even as high as we've been in past years. So the highest Winthrop ever was about 6,500 students. We're closer to 6,000 now. So we still have capacity to add several hundred more.
All righty. So it's interesting because one of the issues that all the universities face is we've had a declining birth rate in this country. And we're not back up to, you know, two for two. We're not we're not there yet. So you and I mean, all of you that do this for a living, you've anticipated this curve, have you not?
Yeah. And we're anticipating the next curve.
Which is?
Which is in 2026, the number of 18-year-olds graduating from high school starts to drop pretty dramatically for about the next 5 to 10 years. And if you think about it, 2026, subtract 18 from that, that gets you to 2008. And what was happening in 2008, the economy was tanking, and so what did people do? They stopped having kids as much. So all of this we can see coming, and that's part of the reason why doing more online programs, more programs geared towards adult students, basically diversifying what we do so we're not relying entirely on the 18-year-olds is a necessity.
Boy, that's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And again, everybody sees the same trend coming. We're not unique in that, but establishing good programs that appeal to adult students is something we're going to have to do.
So do you think you'll get it back to 6,500 before you hit this 2026?
Yeah, I think we will. And the key thing will be having enough programs in place to maintain, even as the overall number of 18-year-olds is going down.
So I know you do forecasts and what have you. So that's 6,500 if you peak out by 2026. What would that drop off to, do you think? Back to 6,000?
We hope not. Again, that's what I'm saying, is doing a lot of these programs now that doing a lot of what I call destination programs, so programs that draw students that we wouldn't get otherwise, we actually want to be higher than 6,500 by then. We want to be 7,000. So, again, trying to keep it at 7 will be the challenge at that point.
Well, one of the things that you're doing, I mean, we talked a little bit about you got a very active sports management program. And part of what you're doing with that is you are taking some space down there at University Center in the Lowenstein building, right next to that new plush but not overly ostentatious 170,000 square foot indoor sports arena. What exactly, I mean, what's your footprint going to be down there? What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, basically it's for our exercise science program. One of the fastest growing areas for us has been in the health science areas and biology as well. So you see things like biology, nutrition, exercise science have grown. This was not a growth maybe that was anticipated 10, 15 years ago when the West Center was being designed. So the lab space in there isn't sufficient enough to deal with increasing enrollment. And so what we're able to do now with the space down in the Lowenstein building is have our classes, our lab classes there, which will allow us to expand the number of students that we can have in that program. So that'll be a primary focus is the lab classes, but also allows us to do some outreach in the community as well. So it does a couple different things for us, and it gives us a presence in that facility. So it does accomplishes multiple goals for us without us having to dramatically alter the West Center or build our own lab space, which would be expensive.
So when you say build your own lab space, I mean, I don't understand what you would have in there. Special types of bikes with breathing
there's
devices?
There's a lot of different equipment that you need in there, and you just need enough space so that the instructor can move around with different students. So it's not a typical classroom where we all kind of go into our desks and we need this kind of confined space. You need more open space to move people around and to be able to get around to everybody. But yeah, it's a lot of equipment as well. So you're right, bikes and other things that we can use to test people on. We need all of that in there. And so it takes up a lot of space. We had when I was the chair of that department when I was at Louisville, we had a huge space for our exercise science lab, but that was a necessity. And even with the huge space, a lot of times you only have 15, 20 students in the lab because you really can only manage that.
So we know the Lowenstein building has, I think, what, 160 or 200,000 square feet of space. You're taking 40,000 on.
Yeah, not that much, but we are taking a decent enough that we could do manage what we needed to manage and have that kind of classroom experience that we wanted.
So when will that be operational?
So we're starting to, I think, get things ready to move in right now. So it'll probably be, I'm not sure if we'll have classes there in the summer. We certainly will have classes there in the fall.
Okay, that's good. All right, with that being said, we're going to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Now we're going to see if the good learned Dr. Mahoney remembers what we do here at Substation 2, which is we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes. And anybody who eats here knows how we do it. And we all say it together. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Slice, slice.
Garden, garden, garden.
There you go. Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Charlie, what's new with Substation 2?
That's easy. We're bringing back our delicious corned beef sandwich. It's lean, perfectly seasoned, sliced fresh to order, and garden just the way you like.
Don't miss this limited time offer at Substation 2.
Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Good pharmacy with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves good pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Did you spend too much money during the holidays? Save money by consolidating those high-interest credit cards into one easy payment with a Founders credit card. Founders has low balance transfer rates and no transfer fees. Visit FoundersFCU.com for more information and to apply for your Founders credit card today. Not a Founders member? Visit RelaxJoinFounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Relax with Founders credit cards. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Have you been personally managing your investment account? Are you happy with your results? Maybe you should consider hiring a genuine money manager. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see how they can help you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
Hungry but can't get out? DoorDash now delivers Substation 2 subs and salads 7 days a week. Just go online to MySubstationII.com and click on the DoorDash delivery tab, and your order will be on its way. That's MySubstationII.com. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Very pleased to have with us today Dr. Dan Mahoney, the president of Winthrop University. And 4 years into this, and he's still okay. Things
yeah.
Well, it sounds like everything is rolling in the right direction. I know you guys constantly have to deal with money issues.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you work on is, you know, what sources of outside money can we get to support scholarships and buildings and what have you. Can you give me an update on development and how that's working?
Yeah, and actually we had a great year when it came to our Winthrop Annual Fund. That's one of the things that help us, gives us the most flexibility. So this year we raised about $714,000. Our goal in the Winthrop plan for 2025 was 700,000. So 6 years early, we passed our Winthrop plan goal. So we're quite happy with that. But we want to keep doing that. That's another one where, kind of like I talked about with enrollment, we want to have a steady consistency in the Winthrop fund, which will allow us to do more things. We're also now focused on increasing the number of endowed scholarships and those types of things, which will also help us attract students.
It wasn't too many years ago that Winthrop did not have an endowment. I mean, this is something that you've been doing, I don't know, 15, maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
But you've been doing it regularly. I mean, where are you up to? What's the size of the endowment?
Yeah, it's somewhat over $50 million, so I don't know that I can't give you the number today. Yeah. Last I looked was maybe $52 million is where we were at. Market's been doing a little better, so it's probably higher than that today. And so when I got here, it was maybe $42 million. So okay. We've gone up about $10 million in the last few years.
And so people understand, what you do is you take a portion of whatever the interest or the earnings are, and you roll it back to the university, and you take the other portion and put it on top of the corpus, so it keeps on growing.
Right.
And
so sometimes it grows not because you raise money, but because we had great year earnings-wise.
Right. And then you have a committee or something that says, okay, we're going to use so much for scholarships, so much for this, so much for that. Is that how it works?
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
With the Winthrop Annual Fund and how we use that $700,000, that's basically how that's done. For the endowment, most of those things were designated by the donor. So the donor will say, I want it to go to a education major who grew up in Rock Hill, South Carolina, who's a junior.
Okay.
Then we'll give it to a junior from Rock Hill, South Carolina, who's an education major. So the committee doesn't have a lot of say over those things. That tends to be more based on what the donor wants.
That's a lot of different people with a lot of different requests. My gosh.
Yeah, and that's what we
have to
manage that. Yeah, that's one of the things our financial aid office has to manage, all of those different scholarships, as well as our faculty determining who should get those. So it's a little bit of a process, but certainly worth it.
I want to go back to the University Center Knowledge Park, because I know part of the plan down there is to create housing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll call it upscale student housing.
Yeah.
Now, that's not Winthrop doing that. That's a private whoever doing it. And they would somewhat, I guess, be in competition with Winthrop, but maybe not so, because these would be people who would be willing to pay a lot more to get more amenities.
Right, and some of that's true, but also our students have, unless they live close by, live on requirement for their freshman and sophomore year. So basically, it'd be competition over the juniors and seniors, many of whom already tend to move off campus. So we don't have as a high percentage of juniors and seniors who stay on campus. They go to some of the places that are already available. So it actually would be probably more competition for some of those other places that have the juniors and seniors.
But is that a piece of infrastructure that helps Winthrop as you try to attract more and more students if we have these different options?
Yeah, again, I think that's the key thing. The more options you have, the better. For every student, that may not be the choice, but when students can see there's lots of options living-wise, that tends to be appealing.
Again, I know I'm becoming a curmudgeon, but when I see some of the options that students have now for housing with spas and pools and all this crazy stuff, private rooms, private bath, my gosh, wow.
Yeah, we joke sometimes that we worry that after they leave us that they'll be disappointed where they live when they try to get their first job and and their parents aren't supporting it. It may not be as nice as the places they lived here.
Boy, that is true. All right, another, I think, rather bold step from Winthrop is what you all are doing in conjunction with the city for the bus service.
Yeah.
Now, I know, I got it. I understand that, you know, you want a way to, for students to get around, and this will be perfect for that. But I was interested. You all are, you're one of the three sponsors or whatever you call it, underwriters or whatever, for the service. Now, you all are going to get what for? What, you've committed for 2 years or 3 years for $100,000 a year or something like that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And what are you going to get on this bus?
In addition to the advertising, so the the wrappings of the bus will have some Winthrop materials there, as well as inside the bus. In fact, I've got a meeting I think tomorrow to talk about some of the things inside the bus, but we'll have lots of advertising. I was also able to get some of the routes to go places that we needed more. So, you know, like right to the Coliseum for our student athletes, they will stop there. So that was not in the original bus route. So we were able to get the routes a little bit better for our students. But I will say, this is when I first got here, and there was all talks about different transportation options in Rock Hill. The one thing the students consistently said is, we want a bus system. This is something we would be willing to support. We need this.
So is that how this is being paid, through activity funds for the students?
We'll be supporting it some. We haven't decided exactly how. That will be something the board will have to decide in April or June when they determine the tuition and fees for this year.
And you've opted to do this, what, for 2 years or 3 years?
I think it was 3 years. I'm trying to remember, it was 3 to 5 years, but yeah.
Okay. And when you have a chance to re-up for this thing, what are you going to be looking for in terms of whether this investment paid off or not?
I think it's probably primarily student utilization of it. So if it's something that our students are using the way that they think that they will use it. So again, when we did surveys of them, they felt this was something they would use on a regular basis. If we're seeing that has come to fruition, then it's something worth supporting. Almost every university I have been at has had some type of a bus system that the students supported in some ways. And that was certainly true. We talked earlier, I didn't have a car when I was an undergrad. It was the bus system in Blacksburg that allowed me to get around Virginia Tech in a way I couldn't have done otherwise. And we paid some fee associated with that, and that helped support that bus system.
Well, it's with everything that's beginning to come up out of the ground, not only at well, through that whole Knowledge Park corridor, I would think I would probably rest a little more comfortably knowing that there was a safe way to get the kids, particularly at night.
Yeah.
From all this proliferation of breweries that we're getting now.
Yeah.
We've got more breweries around here. We've gone from none to a whole bunch.
Yeah.
It's, a good safe way to get the kids back from one point to the other.
Yeah, and that's, again, my undergrad experience, that was very much the case. That was a safe way for people, for the students to get around. It probably avoided a lot of things that would have been much worse if we had not had that bus system.
So last but not least, it's that favorite time of the year called, what is it, Wes Hayes used to say this. He said, the General Assembly is back in session. Everybody run for cover. We've talked about you know, what they're talking about doing with a tuition, giving you a lump sum amount so that you wouldn't raise the tuition. But do you get real concern in terms of what the rest of the budget might look like as far as what the state is going to be giving you, even though what they're giving you now is less than 10% of what you generate?
It's something we're monitoring the whole time and are continuing to look at. Again, what I've seen this year has been more favorable than we probably have seen in any of the years I've been here, but it's still a long, long way to go. So it's what it will end up at the end, it's hard to say. And sometimes, I mean, even some of the years, both here and other states I've been in, this is not unique to South Carolina, but even at June 30th, we weren't 100% sure what we were getting in the next year. And so you kind of just have to play that game and watch it play out for you.
Well, and the other thing you got to watch out for is some what I would call discussions that have happened in past years where they talk a lot about consolidation of campuses and we got too much of this and too much of that. And that, who knows where that could, that something like that could lead to.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. I don't know whether we'll be moving that direction here. I'd be surprised to see it move there very quickly. But even if you look at Georgia, just south of us, have done a number of campus mergers in the last few years that have had, I think they're the ones everybody's watching to see how well that works because they've done some pretty significant changes.
All right, Dr. Dan, what have I missed?
I think you've hit on most of the big topics.
Oh, come on. There's got to be something back there. I know what.
Yes.
We neglected to talk about improvements going on here at Cherry Road.
Yeah.
Which you know nothing about.
Yeah, no. I know a little bit about. I know we had to do some easements with the state, get approval. I always have to remind people that our land is not really entirely our land. It's state land. So anything we do, we've got to work in conjunction with the state. But we've done some things now to allow this project to continue moving forward. But and again, a part of our hope is that it makes it even more pedestrian friendly for our students. So you talk about safety, that's always on our mind, that they can come over to the places like substation and other things over here easily and safely.
Well, you got to figure a way to get them safely across that road. And
yeah,
I hope the geniuses that are putting this together are going to do something to slow that traffic down.
Yeah.
Dr. Dan, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it. Dan Mahoney, our guest this afternoon, president of Winthrop University, and that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks again to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And one more time, we're here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes. And how do we do it, everybody?
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
That's how we do it. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.